wild animals that get in people's houses, or the ones where they wrestle alligators. Sometimes we'd just watch cartoons. The TV company made a mistake and gave us more channels than we signed up for, so there was a lot to choose from, more than we'd ever had before. I told Mom we should probably tell them they made a mistake. But Mom said what they didn't know wouldn't hurt them, and that sometimes life just works out. That had not been my experience, though. When I told her that, she laughed and laughed. I liked it when my mother laughed. After TV time, it was time to eat again. Mom said Cutter and I were eating machines, so I tried not to eat too much. But Cutter didn't give it a second thought. He scarfed down food, and he usually didn't care what kind. Mom said he had a hollow leg. At lunch, I made him eat some fruit, even if it was just canned fruit cocktail. Sometimes we had chips to go with our sandwiches, and once in a while we had cookies. I like homemade chocolate chip cookies, but we only had those if Mom was in the mood to bake, which was hardly ever, because she was always so tired from working. Mom worked one job during the weekdays and one on the weekends, so she was at work pretty much all the time. She had to do that, she said, so we could have the kind of life we had. Sometimes, when I saw people with their fancy cars and their nice houses, I wondered how many jobs they must have had to work to have that kind of life. After lunch, it was finally time to go to the pool. Cutter was not a very good swimmer, so I made him wait as long as I could to go to the pool, even though he started begging to go as soon as his eyes popped open in the morning. He made me nervous in the water, and it was hard to watch him all the time. I knew there was a lifeguard there who could save him if he started to drown, but Cutter was my responsibility. That's what Mom said every night when she kissed me goodnight. She said the same thing. I'll be gone when you get up. Be good, be smart, and watch out for your brother. Then she said, I love you more than life itself. And even though she couldn't be home as much as I wanted her to be, I knew she meant it. I didn't like it when people said bad things about my mother. Her old boyfriend Joe said a lot of mean things about her, and about Cutter and me, too. He was not very nice to her, and that night after he'd said the worst things ever, I gave her a hug and told her not to listen to him. I felt bad, because he'd caught me snooping in his wallet, and that's what caused their fight. But she said it wasn't my fault, even though I shouldn't snoop in people's stuff. I was still working on that. Then she hugged me and made me promise I'd grow up and have a better life than she did. She wouldn't stop crying until I pinky swore I would. The trouble was, I wasn't real sure how to get a better life, or even what she had in mind. At the pool, the moms and dads didn't talk to me and Cutter. I didn't really expect them to. They were parents, and parents usually don't talk to kids unless it's to their own. But it was more than that. They looked at us as if we were sand that got in their bathing suits. When I told Mom about it, she said, Well then, just don't go up there, Kaylee. She had her tired voice when she said it, the one that told me I should just drop it. But even though Cutter couldn't swim very well and the people ignored us, I liked being there. I liked the water and the sunshine and the sound of people laughing. Even though we didn't talk to each other, we, Cutter and I and all the moms and kids, were all there together. It was our pool, and so Cutter and I went up there every day after lunch. We walked a long way to get there. We swam, and we walked a long way back home, and then we did it all over again the next day. And that was, I expected, the way we'd spend that whole summer of my 11th year in Cutter's 6th. I was, of course, as wrong as could be. Jency. Their days had settled into a routine, every day much the same as the one before it. Jency had taken to going on walks after dinner, leaving the girls to play cards with their mother on the screened-in porch as the day ended and the first lightning bugs began to emerge. The girls loved the time with her mother. She watched the three of them, hunched over their cards at the rickety little table they'd set up on the porch. Pilar liked winning. Zara liked being included. Her mother, for her part, just seemed ecstatic to have the girls with her in any capacity, and patiently re-explained the rules of rummy and spades and crazy eights night after night. Every night, Jency told herself she'd stay and play with them. Yet every night, by the time dinner was over and another day was gotten through, she felt the pull to escape the confines of home and family, the magnet in her chest tugging her back to the streets of her youth. She wandered those streets, looking for the childhood she'd forgotten, the good parts from before the heart started showing up. She'd been desperate to forget this place when she'd left at 18. Now she forced herself to remember, if only in an effort to forget the more recent past. She quizzed herself as she walked. Didn't that house used to be gray? Was that the house that always smelled like curry? What was the name of the girl who lived in that yellow house, the one who was so crazy about horses? Was that the house that was always decorated so outlandishly for Halloween? She wondered if the same people still lived there, if the woman still sat on the porch dressed as a witch, scaring kids. She would find out in October, if she was still there. But she couldn't still be here by then. She would dry up and blow away like the leaves, crunchy and brown and lifeless. She had to find a way out. She'd told herself that this was just a visit, a stopping-off place en route somewhere else. But where? She had no idea. For the first time in her life, she didn't have a plan. Even when she'd run from here, she'd had a plan of what to do, forming it as she and her father drove north. It took her more than a week to work up the courage to find out if the hideaway was still there. She took the path around the neighborhood lake, telling herself she didn't have to veer from it, coaxing herself along with internal promises that chances were the little offshoot path wouldn't be there any longer. It had been so long ago. Things had changed. Progress had happened even there, in the neighborhood that time seemed to have forgotten. Her path along the lake was nothing more than a walk like any other night, she reasoned. And yet her eyes were already betraying her, scanning the landscape for the path with a kind of hope. She needed, she realized, to get back to it. Walking along, she felt like a time traveler. With each step, she was closer to the young girl she'd once been. It came back to her a little more, the feeling that the future was something to be run toward, that good things were possible. There, on that dirt path, she was younger, brighter, more innocent. She didn't know that life could end with the arrival of black SUVs containing agents in dark suits and sunglasses, that someone you loved could lie to you so completely, that everything you worked for could go up in smoke as surely as if someone had struck a match and set it all on fire. As she stepped off the beaten path onto the less traveled one that was right where she remembered, she felt special again. She was the girl who could do anything. She was the sophomore nominated to homecoming court, then improbably elected queen. The girl who still didn't know that the next day the hearts would start arriving. This path was her looking glass, her wardrobe, her yellow brick road. She pushed through brush and brambles, her shins and ankles brushing up against prickles with barely registered pain. She kept her eyes peeled around every corner as she wound her way deeper into the woods. When doubts about her safety began playing in her mind, she banished them, letting herself enter fully into her memories of past visits, of what it was to be here, of whom she used to meet there and the things they used to say to each other. There were the dreams and the whispers, the fights and the surrenders, the truths and the lies. She had been herself then, with him. But was that self a shadow of her actual self, or the more realized version? Did life add to or take away from who we are at 16? The path took her to the little ring of trees waiting there for her like old friends, their branches waving her over as if they'd been waiting all these years for her inevitable return. The breeze through their branches sounded like a sigh of relief. She slipped through the leaves to enter into a world apart, the place of shelter she'd run to so many times before. Their world, they claimed, hers and Everett's. It existed just for them, and no matter what happened, they could always get back to it, hide inside it. She turned around, hugging herself as she looked up at the bit of sky visible from the center, the leaves otherwise blocking the visibility out or in. That is what they'd loved about it, how utterly hidden they'd felt. At a time when they'd had no space of their own, this had been exactly what they needed. A place to slip from sight, to hole up and disappear together. In that space they could, and did, do anything they wanted. She'd lied to her parents so many times. She was going to Bright's, to the movies, to a party, to the library. But she came here. This place was the one place she'd always, always felt safe, until she didn't feel safe anywhere. She shivered in the gathering dark, sensibility returning as she reached for her phone in her pocket just to be sure. She held it up to check the reception and thought of the news report she'd seen on the television her mom kept on in the kitchen all day. There was an interview with a lead detective on the case of a young girl who'd disappeared nearby. She'd started watching it with the concern of a parent before realizing the girls were there, both watching the same thing, their eyes round with horror. Pilar had looked at her as though she was uncertain why their mother had brought them to a place where little girls could disappear. She'd snapped the TV off, despite her mother's protest that the weather report was up next. Now, standing in the woods with darkness coming on fast, she thought about how far she'd ventured from earshot. No one could hear her if she screamed. Anyone could be in these woods. She wrapped her arms around herself and listened for danger. But all she could hear was wind, birds, and the rustle of the branches. What had happened before was over. She had nothing to be afraid of anymore. She forced herself to stand there a few seconds longer, and then she let herself leave, her steps out of the woods quicker than her steps in. She returned home to find her mother standing alone on the porch, waiting for her, but trying not to look like she was. Jency folded her arms across her chest and waited for whatever she was going to say. She saw the concern her mother was unable to mask. Jency held back from saying what she wanted to say, which was, "I love you, and I'm sorry I stayed gone so long." "Are you okay?" her mother asked. In the light from the bare bulb hanging from the rickety ceiling fan, she could see that her mother's eyes had filled with tears. She blinked them away, but it was too late. Jency waved her hand in the air, reassuringly, "We're okay." "Well, you know, you're welcome to stay here as long as you need. The girls could even enroll in school," she smiled. "I hear the schools around here are good." The sentence seemed to have a question mark attached to the end of it, as if she were asking Jency if what she'd heard was accurate. "I don't know much about the schools anymore, now that I don't have kids that age. Of course, I guess they could have gone downhill. They're always changing things around. Seems like something's in the news every day about it." "I'm sure the schools are fine, Mom. Bright wouldn't have moved here if they weren't top-notch." She thought of the way Bright looked at her son, like she was watching a continual miracle. "Trust me," she added with a laugh. "So you've seen Bright?" her mom asked, trying and failing to sound casual. "Yep," she answered. "That must be nice for you girls, together again," her mom pressed. "Sure," she said. "We've talked some, at the pool." Anxious to change the subject, she added, "The girls sure do enjoy having the pool. It's made these 3 weeks go by fast." Her mother ignored Jency's attempt at a segue. "And isn't it strange, with her married to Everett now?" Jency thought of serious, intent Everett, begging her not to leave as if he could change anything that had happened, as if her father wasn't already at the wheel of the car and her things weren't already packed. For a while, even Everett hadn't known where she'd gone, because he could have inadvertently let on where she was to the wrong person, a person who'd been growing increasingly bold and dangerous. She'd only had to look at Everett to confirm that. "It's fine, Mom. We've all grown up. Things change." The way she said it, it sounded so simple. Her mother was silent, thinking this over. Jency rested her head against the knotty wood and listened to the crickets, cicadas, and tree frogs croaking out a summer serenade. In their previous neighborhood, there hadn't been the sounds of nature, at least not that she could recall. They'd drown out those noises with their sound system, their waterfall, their man-made ambience. Standing there listening, She thought that perhaps in attempting to give them everything, she and Arch had cheated their girls. She heard a shriek from inside the house, followed by a belly laugh. "They seem good," her mom said. "They are," she replied, a little too quickly. "We all are." Her mom sniffed the air, and Jency wondered what scent she was detecting. Her father's pipe smoke? The charcoal grill down the street? The jasmine in the hanging basket? Or the magnolia tree in the yard? Or the gardenias in her garden? Maybe it was the baby shampoo her youngest daughter still used, Innocence bottled. She didn't ask, though. "I don't think you're going to have any trouble here now," her mother said.
No, I don't think so,"
Jency agreed. "I'm glad you came back here," her mother added, her voice tentative, almost cautious. "I think it was time." Jency sensed her mother's discomfort around her. She felt it, too. They were relearning each other, having become basically strangers in their years apart. They no longer knew how to be around each other, so their conversations were awkward, infused with a strange tension that Jency hoped would go away with time. Her mother stood and began gathering the playing cards, still strewn about on the table. Jency moved to help her, her hand falling on the ace of spades. Her mother rested her own hand on Jency's. There were age spots on the back of her mother's hand that hadn't been there when she'd left. They stood there for just a moment like that, not speaking, their eyes locked in what Jency assumed was her mother's version of a promise. She would keep her safe. They would be okay. All the things a parent tells a child. Jency knew this because she was a parent now. She knew the urge to protect. And she also knew that even when you couldn't protect your child, you would still vow that you would. Lance needed to find a babysitter or he was going to lose his job. He had to stop depending on that neighbor lady, Zell. She was like a fairy godmother, showing up just when he was about to explode, taking the kids to the pool so he could work for a few hours without interruption. He grabbed the bag that held the kids' pool things. Sunscreen and towels neatly rolled, a box of snack crackers, some change for the drink machine. He had not put this bag together. Zell had. He wondered if he could hire her to come over and create the same degree of organization in every aspect of his life. Maybe this was why Deborah had liked her. Now that she was gone, he remembered how often Deborah used to mention Zell, back when he didn't pay attention because he took everything for granted. He'd barely listened to his wife then. He wasn't sure what role Zell had played in Deborah's life, and of course, he couldn't ask Deborah now. "Lila!" he called. "Let's go!" He wanted the kids gone. He wanted the house quiet. He'd promised himself he would not work today. He would take a true break. Watch sports. It didn't matter which sport. Anything on ESPN would do. Drink beer. Sit around in his boxers. He would not be dad today. He would not hop up to solve anyone's problems. He would sit for longer than a 5-minute stretch. At lunch, he would make a big, messy hoagie sandwich and devour it on the couch. He would not use a plate. He would burp and fart and not have to apologize for it because he would be no one's role model for a good couple of hours. He had fantasized about this time nearly as much as he used to fantasize about sex. Who was he kidding? He still fantasized about sex when he wasn't too damn tired to do so. But he did not fantasize about Deborah. He couldn't bring himself to do that. It just seemed wrong. The women he fantasized about now were always faceless. The kids materialized from wherever they'd been keeping themselves, their faces as drawn as if he were sending them off to do math problems all day. "You guys ready?" he asked, clapping his hands together, ignoring his children's obvious displeasure. Lila and Alec nodded glumly. "Okay, well, Zell said to come over whenever you were ready." He opened the door, a blast of hot air hitting him in the face as he did. On the heels of the early spring came the unrelenting heat and humidity of summer, something he'd never gotten used to and would not mind leaving behind if he got the chance to return to Ohio, something he'd been discussing with his sister lately. She thought it would be a good idea, considering the circumstances, and he didn't entirely disagree. "Have fun, guys," he said, waving them in the direction of Zell's house. Obediently, they trotted out the door. As Lila passed him, he looped the bag over her capable shoulders, ignoring the way they slumped forward. This had been awful for the kids, too. Their summer vacation had probably not felt like a vacation at all. He tried not to think too much about their feelings. Because what could he do about it? What could he change? Deborah was gone, and he was holding things together without her. He was doing the best he could. It had become his mantra. He closed the door behind them and paused to take in the quiet house, inhaling the silence like a drug. He stood utterly still, just breathing. Usually when Zell took the kids, he increased his pace, scurried around doing laundry and dishes and paying bills and squeezing in work wherever he could. He worked when he should be eating, sleeping, showering. Taking this time for himself felt decadent, wasteful, as luxurious as that spa Deborah had convinced him to go to with her years ago. It felt selfish. But he wouldn't think about that now. He would enjoy this. He watched from the kitchen door as Zell ushered Lila and Alec into her car. He stayed just out of sight as the car's engine whirred into motion and the lights came on. He stood frozen in place until the car and his children were gone, feeling guilt wash over him as he thought of Alec's words upon hearing that it would be Zell and not Lance who would be taking them to the pool today.
"You never have fun with us anymore, Dad."
He'd told his son to quit whining, and yet the kid had a point. Lance never had fun anymore, period. He cast a longing glance at the TV and at the fridge with the six-pack of beer inside, bought for just this occasion. Then, with a sigh of surrender, he headed upstairs to change into his swim trunks. But he was taking the beer with him. Right. She held Christopher's hand as she led him over to the pool, barely listening to his chatter about the ducks on the lake and the clouds in the sky. Instead, she tried to watch Jency without appearing to. Jency's girls were playing with another girl, all three running from the girl's brother whenever he came near them. Jency, seemingly oblivious to their shrieks, was reading a People magazine on a chaise longue. She helped Christopher into the pool and glanced longingly in her old friend's direction, looking away too late when Jency unexpectedly looked up from her magazine. Busted, she raised her hand in greeting as if she'd meant to catch Jency's eye the whole time.
"I thought that was you," she said, her voice too loud and excited.
As kids, she'd always been the awkward one, the tag-along just trying to match her steps to Jency's. It was funny how lightning-fast she could fall back into her old, awkward ways. She wished some of her friends were around, friends who only knew her now, but the overcast day had kept them away. Jency returned her wave and went back to reading her magazine as Bright, disappointed, focused on her son and took her designated seat on the hot concrete, the heat radiating through her swimsuit. She talked to Christopher, cheered his continued attempts to submerge his face underwater, and did her best not to look back over at Jency, who, finished with her magazine, had closed her eyes and appeared to be sleeping. Bored, Bright's mind wandered to the email she'd received that morning from her former boss, the one marked urgent, asking her to come in for a meeting regarding her return to work. Minutes later, according to the timestamp, she'd received another email from a coworker begging her to come back. "This place isn't the same without you. We miss you. We need you." While it was nice to be wanted, she wasn't sure she wanted to go back there. She wasn't sure she could get excited about selling technical training to Fortune 500 companies again. And yet, returning to work would stop the second child discussion in its tracks, at least for a while. "Ouch," Jency said as her backside made contact with the hot concrete, jarring Bright from her internal debate. Bright gave her a welcoming smile, glad for the distraction. "Hi," she said. "I'd tell you that I used to have to do this when mine were little, but I mostly had help with this part of motherhood," Jency said, gesturing to the shallow end and to Christopher donned in the water wings.
"You were lucky," Bright said, even though she didn't really feel that way.
Tiring as it was, she wanted to experience every moment with her only child, because he would be their only child.
if only she could figure out how to make Everett understand that. Using a return to work as an excuse to put the debate off was sounding even more appealing.
Mom, when can Lila and I have a sleepover?
Jensie's oldest ran over to ask, breathless from running. Her name was Pilar. The youngest was Zara. As girls, Jensie and Bright had dreamed up baby names. Neither Pilar nor Zara had, so far as Bright could recall, ever been on Jensie's list. But then again, Christopher hadn't been on Bright's.
We can talk about it later, Jensie said, her voice kind and patient in front of Bright.
But Mom, Lila wants to. Pilar was relentless, which was expected, seeing as who her mother was. But Pilar didn't look like Jensie. Bright guessed she looked like the father, whose name, Bright knew, was Archer. Arch for short. This name so suited the man who would marry Jensie that Bright had laughed when she read it on the wedding announcement tacked to her parents' refrigerator. Bright had been certain the marriage meant Jensie would never return to Sycamore Glen. At the time, she'd been relieved at the thought. Yet here she was, sitting beside Jensie on the edge of the same pool where they'd played Marco Polo as children, Bright feeling around blindly for Jensie as she listened for Polo in reply to her Marco.
I'm sure she does, and we will, Jensie said, her voice firm with an edge that hadn't been there before, but we're not going to discuss it any more today.
Pilar turned and, grumbling, marched back over to her friend. The two girls took their spots in line to jump off the diving board, waiting behind the little boy who made Bright nervous. She'd taken to keeping an eye on him whenever she and Christopher were there. He wasn't a strong swimmer, and there was never a parent with him. He had an older sister who usually looked out for him, but the sister seemed to be caught in Pilar and Zara's orbit. Bright remembered the feeling, how strong that pull could be. With Pilar gone, Jensie turned back to her.
Sorry about that, she said.
No problem, Bright said.
Christopher had grown tired of the pool and was hanging on her legs. She moved them up and down in the water, giving him a ride. It was the closest thing to exercise she got these days. If she went back to work, she could use her lunch hour to go to the gym like she used to. She and Jensie lapsed into silence again, both of them watching Christopher ride up and down in the water, his little face filled with a smile.
He's really cute, Jensie mused aloud.
The comment felt weighted with unsaid words. This was not just Bright's son. This was Everett's son, too.
Would they ever talk about what had happened after Jensie left?
Part of Bright wanted to just say it already, get it all out in the open. But part of her didn't want to broach the subject of Everett and her, because that would mean she'd have to talk about Jensie and Everett, which was not something she liked remembering, even years later.
He's a good baby, was all Bright said in response.
Jensie patted her arm and started to stand. I hate to tell you this, but he's hardly a baby anymore. Bright looked up.
You sound just like Everett, she said,
the name slipping from her lips without meaning for it to. There was no avoiding him. In the end, they'd have to acknowledge his existence. It was there between them, as obvious as the child hanging on her legs.
He's right, Jensie said and shrugged.
She turned her attention to Zara on the diving board and clapped her hands loudly.
Come on, Zara, let's see a flip, she called.
Zara, from the diving board, tried to get her mother to be quiet.
Mom,
she intoned before making a polite, unobtrusive jump into the deep end. The little boy came after her, his eyes on his sister, but she wasn't looking. She was helping Zara out of the water with effusive praise.
That kid makes me nervous, Bright said to Jensie.
She pulled Christopher from the water and stood him beside her before standing up herself.
Why?
Jensie asked. Bright took Christopher's hand and pulled him to her side, as if by keeping him safe, she could vicariously keep the little boy safe too.
Watch him, she said, and pointed.
The two women watched as the boy leaped from the diving board, sank under the water, and disappeared from sight for several seconds. Bright held her breath, as did Jensie. She felt Jensie's hand reach for her forearm. Her fingernails, painted the color pink a child might choose, dug into her skin as she strained forward. Together, they willed the boy to the surface. When he finally did rise, he was sputtering and coughing up water, his hands flailing. In unison, Their eyes went to the male lifeguard, who was talking to the gorgeous blonde female lifeguard and not watching the scene in the deep end at all.
"Should we do something?" Jensi asked.
"No, look," Bright said, directing her attention to the struggling child who had, once again, made it to the side. But his sister wasn't there to help him out of the water this time.
"My heart is going 90 miles an hour, Jensi said, grabbing for her chest. "I need a drink after that."
She pretended to check her non-existent watch.
"Is it 5 yet?
The two laughed as Bright led Christopher over to where her bag of tricks was. She had a juice box and animal crackers ready for him. She opened the box and took a handful for herself, then offered it to Jensi.
"Oh, what the hell," Jensi said, and reached into the box, taking a handful.
Bright wondered if the taste reminded her of her childhood.
"You should come for dinner tonight,"
Bright said, her mouth still full of crackers. It was an impulse, but she didn't regret saying it once it was out. She wanted to bring Jensi into her life, the one she had now. She wanted her to see how it had all turned out. And perhaps, with a few drinks in her, Jensi would spill the details of what had brought her back. Bright listened as her old friend accepted the invitation, made plans even as she tried not to think of what Everett would say. Zell. The sound of Zell's name being called interrupted her attempt to eavesdrop on Jensi and Bright's conversation. She never learned. Guilty, she looked over to see Lance walking toward her. She was glad to see him, even if she had been the one to encourage him to take a break from the children. Lord knew he needed it. Sometimes when she got up in the middle of the night to get some water, after being awakened by one of her hot flashes, she saw his light on, knew he was burning the midnight oil as the kids slept. Without his wife, the man was running pillar to post.
"I can't believe you came up here,"
she called out to him, her guilt complex mostly forgotten. He gave her a bashful smile. She saw the other mothers' heads turning as they noticed a new man in their midst, a very nice-looking man. She was older than all of them, but she wasn't blind.
"Well, I felt bad," he said. "I mean, if I have time to goof off, I guess I should use that time to spend with the kids." "I know they'll be glad to see you," she returned his smile and called out to the kids. "Lila, Alec, look who's here."
Alec had spent the last hour following the head lifeguard around, peppering him with questions about the chemicals they put in the pool, and begging to let him help take measurements of the samples they pulled from the water. Lila had become thick as thieves with Jensi Cabot's girls in the weeks since the pool's opening, with the three of them moving in a tight cluster. They picked up a stray today, that little girl who usually hovered on the edges, looking anxious. Both kids broke away from what they were doing and scampered over to their father with big, grateful grins on their faces.
"Daddy,"
they said in unison, forgetting they were too cool to call him that. He hugged them both, and they told him what they were up to as Zell looked on proudly.
"They're having a good time," Zell said.
It felt good to be part of something, but Lila gave her a look that told her she'd gone too far. Sometimes when Lila looked at her, she thought that the child knew the truth, even though she couldn't possibly. Zell saw the scar on Lila's pencil-thin leg, forever white against her tanned skin, and remembered the day the girl had gotten it. That had been the beginning. Lila turned to Jensi's girls to introduce them to her father.
"These are my friends, Pilar and Zara," she said, waving her hands at them.
The two girls giggled and waved, but the third girl, the one who'd been tagging along just today, stood silent and overlooked. Zell's heart went out to her.
"Nice to meet you," Lance said,
his tone formal as he shifted his weight and looked around the pool, perhaps wondering why he'd come, where he fit.
"Will you throw me, Dad?"
Alec asked, his voice husky and reserved in front of the girls.
"Sure, buddy,"
Lance said, looking relieved to have something to do. He glanced over at Zell.
"Thanks,"
he said to her, and then he let Alec lead him away. She tried to catch the other little girl's eye, to give her a smile of encouragement, but she turned away too quickly, intent on following the other girls, her eyes focused on staying in step with them, her legs hurrying to keep up. Jency. She hurried back to her chair, fuming internally over her stupid mistake. She straightened her towel and threw herself down. What was she thinking, saying yes to Bright's invitation? She'd been caught up in nostalgia, maybe, her resolve weakened by the heat. She had no business attempting a social engagement of any sort, much less a social engagement with her old best friend and her first love, now married to each other and living in the same neighborhood they'd all grown up in. She was in no shape to see Everett again, much less Everett flanked by his wife and son. She had enough on her plate without adding that stressor. Her therapist back in New Canaan would have had a fit. Of course, therapists were a luxury from the past. Ironic that, now that she had real, actual problems, she could no longer afford one. Of course, her parents would help pay for a therapist if she really needed one. But to ask for that was to admit she needed help both financially and mentally. She was loath to admit either. From the opposite side of the pool, she watched as Bright fed Christopher sections of apple, smiling like a woman who had the world by the tail. Through slitted eyes, she'd forgotten her sunglasses, Jency studied her former friend, marveling anew at just how lovely she'd become. Gone was the awkward uncertainty that used to characterize Bright. In its place was a glow that radiated from within, as if that inner beauty people used to talk about when referring to Bright had finally, over time, worked its way out. When they were friends, she used to tell Bright she was pretty, reassure her that, even though her chest was flat and she had thick glasses, she still had a lot of good attributes. But she was mostly just trying to make Bright feel better, and they both knew it. Bright, Jency had believed, would always be the sidekick. But something had changed. Bright had gone from looking like Velma in Scooby-Doo to looking like Audrey Hepburn. Jency's reassuring little lies had come true. Bright had come into her own. Old friends or not, Jency didn't want to see more of Bright and her idyllic existence than she had to. Not when her own life had turned to shit. She could be happy for her friend without having to witness the happiness. She had to come up with an excuse to get out of the evening, and fast. The little boy was crying and probably getting tired, ready for his nap. She would get Bright's phone number before she left, then take the chicken shit way out and text her regrets. It wasn't a very grown-up way to handle things, but it would get the job done. She stood up and hurried back over to catch Bright before she disappeared, and left Jency with no other option but to show up at the address Bright had enthusiastically rattled off. It used to be the piano teacher's house, remember? You could always hear the music when you walked by. Jency nodded. She remembered the house well, a white two-story with black shutters and a front porch much like the other houses in the neighborhood. Not big, but not small, just right for the middle-class neighborhood they'd all called home. 7, Bright had said. See you then. Then she'd scurried away, leaving Jency to feel the regret whoosh through her veins. At 7, she was usually preparing for her nightly walk. At 7, she was still promising herself she wouldn't end up in the hideaway as darkness fell, playing Remember When. Last night she'd heard twigs snap, as if someone was walking around, someone who'd also come to those woods. She'd sat quietly until the sounds disappeared, then bolted out of the woods, running nearly all the way home, the bad memories nipping at her heels. Now she moved almost as quickly to get to Bright before she left, her eyes locked on her and not much else. Which is how she ran smack into the man she'd noticed earlier. He was handsome, in a dad sort of way, a way Arch had never succumbed to. She'd once been proud of this, the way Arch had remained distinctly Arch, without giving himself over to the domesticated look that seemed to seize most of the men she knew. And yet, in hindsight, maybe that hadn't been for the best. Maybe a surrendered man was a trustworthy one. I'm so sorry, she apologized as she steadied herself, using his forearms to stop the force of their impact from knocking them both to the ground. He stepped back, gazing down at her with a look that was half amusement, half confusion. It's okay, he said, looking embarrassed even though he'd done nothing except wander into her path.
I'm so sorry, she said again. He laughed.
So you said.
She glanced over at Bright, who was obliviously gathering her things. She wasn't gone yet. That was good.
I was rushing to speak to my friend. She pointed in Bright's direction. I wasn't watching where I was going.
No worries, he said.
The little girl who'd been playing with her daughters for the past several weeks sauntered over to them.
Dad, she said, addressing the man, I thought you were going to play with us.
She looked up at the two adults. A giddy look crossed her face.
Are you two talking about the sleepover?
What sleepover? They both asked at the same time, with the same degree of alarm in their voices.
Then they both laughed.
We want to have a sleepover, all three of us.
The girl said it in a huff, as if they, the adults, were just so slow.
Well,
now might not be the best time, the man said, shifting uncomfortably as he spoke. He looked over at Jency with a pained expression.
I'm, a newly single dad and not really ready to host an, event for the kids.
Jency waved her hand, dismissing his apology.
Oh, gosh, sure, I don't blame you, I get it.
She refrained from explaining just how much she got it. She looked over. Bright was on her way out. She was going to miss her. She needed to get away from him, yet her southern manners prevailed. Her friends in Connecticut used to tease her about her accent, her sense of decorum, her general southernness. Try as she might, she couldn't shake it. She spoke quickly.
We're just in town visiting my parents for a bit this summer, so I can't really, host guests either.
She patted her daughter's wet head.
You guys can see each other here at the pool, okay?
The girl sighed deeply.
Okay, she said.
Deflated, she slumped away with heavy, dramatic footsteps.
Well, nice to meet you, Jency said, offering parting words.
He turned to her with that same amused, confused look on his face.
But we didn't really meet, did we?
She looked up at him and blinked, then glanced over at Bright again. Thankfully, she had stopped to talk to someone.
Oh, I guess not.
Obliged, she thrust her hand out.
I'm Jency.
He shook her hand briefly, then squinted at her. She noticed that his eyes were exactly the same color as his hair. She liked the uniformity of it, how utterly congruent he was.
Jency? He questioned. That's different.
She rolled her eyes. The name was a relic of her childhood. In school, she'd been one of several Jennifers. She was Jennifer C., or, as her second grade teacher coined it, Jen C. There had also been Jen L. As second grade went on, the teacher ran the abbreviations together so fast that they came out as one word, so Jen C became Jency, and Jen L became Janelle. As far as Jency knew, Janelle also went by that nickname to this day.
It's an old nickname, she explained hastily to him now. My real name is Jennifer, but no one calls me that.
I like it,
he said, nodding as if he'd considered it and found it acceptable.
My name's Lance, short for Lancelot, he grinned.
My mom had a thing for Camelot.
She laughed.
Seriously?
He raised his eyebrows, held her gaze for a second, looking totally serious. But he couldn't hold the look for long as his smile broke through.
No, my name's just Lance, but I had to come up with a story to keep up with yours.
She laughed along with him, then noticed Bright swinging her bag over her shoulder and sliding on her flip-flops as she wrapped up her conversation. She quickly clapped him on the shoulder.
Well, Lancelot, it was nice to meet you, but I've got to catch my friend over there.
She hitched her thumb in Bright's direction.
Good luck finding Camelot.
She walked away, shaking her head.
Good luck finding Camelot?
She was clearly out of practice at this whole opposite sex thing. She'd once been so good at it. But that was a long time ago, before the hearts had started arriving, before Arch had claimed her as his own. She got to Bright in the nick of time, reaching for her in order to stop her from walking away. Bright turned around with a startled look, but her face immediately relaxed when she saw it was just Jency.
Oh, Jency, hey! She said,
her face filling with a grin that lived up to her name. Everything okay? She asked. But then her smile faded, and her eyes strayed to the pool as a whistle erupted, and someone screamed, and, all around them, people started running. Lance. He was standing there, staring into the water, thinking about the beautiful woman's comment about finding Camelot, feeling like the furthest cry from a brave and gallant knight, when he saw the little boy, a dark shape gone still beneath the water. It took him a moment to realize the child wasn't playing. He wasn't seeing how long he could hold his breath or pulling a prank on his friends. Lance dove in without thinking, a reflex that extended, it turned out, beyond his own children. As he pushed deeper under the water toward the boy, he had two thoughts. What do I do now? And where the hell is the lifeguard? He reached the child in seconds, but it felt like it took half an hour to get his hands on him. Eyes wide in spite of the way the chlorine was burning them, he scooped the boy up, just like he did when his own children fell asleep watching TV and he had to carry them up to bed. But this child wasn't sleeping. Unready for the heft of the boy's weight, the words dead weight flashed through his mind, but he pushed them away. He struggled for a second, his lungs beginning to burn as he dragged both himself and the child to the surface. At the surface, there was air, there was solid ground, there was surely someone who knew CPR. He cursed himself for never learning it. From under the water, he could hear the clamor as people responded to what was happening. A whistle blew, a child screeched, a woman yelled. He could make out someone yelling, "Call 911!" He broke through the surface just as the lifeguard materialized at his side, saying, "I got him, I got him," in a confident voice that made Lance want to say, "Well, you didn't have him when it mattered." But the lifeguard knew CPR. The lifeguard was trained in things like this. He'd probably waited his whole lifeguarding career for this, the moment he got to play hero. Lance loosened his grip on the boy, and the child was taken from his arms. A trio of lifeguards gathered on the hot concrete as they laid out the two still child and began working on him. Lance swam to the side and, exhausted, balanced his elbows on the edge to watch what was happening as he caught his breath. His eyes burned, and he blinked rapidly. He sucked big, grateful gulps of air into his lungs. The entire pool had gone quiet. All around him, the people stood still and watched the little boy. The silence simultaneously eerie and reverent. Someone had turned off the never-ending radio they kept cranked over the speakers at an obnoxious volume. He looked around for the child's mother, but no one stepped forward. A little girl was crying hysterically. He assumed she was the boy's sister. He saw Zell slip an arm around her, and the girl struggled against the restraint, trying in vain to get to the boy's side. The lifeguard kept working on the boy, who was blue and unconscious. Lance prayed for the first time in a very long time. "Please, please, please," he said, his voice barely a whisper. Suddenly he remembered his own son and scanned around to account for his children. He found Alec frozen in his spot in line for the diving board. Their eyes met, and Alec gave him a smile so fleeting he wasn't sure if he saw it, then gave him a thumbs up, an affirmation that his father had done something right when it counted most. But would it count if the boy didn't survive? Lance pulled himself from the water just as the distant wail of sirens approached. He caught the eyes of the beautiful woman, and they exchanged grim looks. After the EMTs arrived, things moved fast. From a distance, it was hard to make out exactly what they were doing. Lance just saw arms flying and faces frowning. In short order, they'd secured the boy's neck, put him on a stretcher, and headed to the ambulance. The boy's older sister, a little girl Lance had seen playing with Lila just a few minutes before the whole episode began, ran after him, screaming his name, "Cutter!" and then, "I have to go with him!" Lila and Jensie's daughters did their best to comfort her, but she was inconsolable, shaking them off and attempting to catch up to the ambulance and climb inside. The EMTs, intent on helping the child and seemingly unconcerned about his hysterical sister, bustled past as if she wasn't there. One, filled with the grace the other two did not possess, turned back. "We're going to take your brother now," he said. "We're going to help him." He squeezed the little girl's thin shoulders and raced after his co-workers. Moments later, the ambulance shrieked away with lights flashing and siren blaring. The nearby adults, suddenly linked by the situation, formed a messy circle around the girl, offering words of comfort and trying to decide what to do. The children gathered there too, wide-eyed and silent. Zell, ever helpful, rubbed the little girl's back and assured her that she could go to the hospital just as soon as they got the boy settled in. She said, "settled in," as if you were going to a bed and breakfast, but her voice was soothing and even and seemed to calm them all down.
"Someone needs to call his mother."
The woman standing beside Jency spoke, her voice shaky. She had scooped up her little boy and was more clinging to him than holding him. Zell spoke to the girl. "Do you know your mom's number, honey?" Zell leaned over to Lila.
"What's the name again?"
she stage whispered.
"Kaylee."
Lila's attempt at a stage whisper came out, sounding more like a hiss. The little girl ceased crying long enough to give her a "duh" look and nodded. Zell handed her a phone, and she punched in the numbers. Before it could start ringing, Zell took the phone from her hand.
"But I want to talk to her,"
the girl cried out, trying unsuccessfully to get the phone from Zell. Zell turned to the girl.
"Kaylee,"
she said, gentle but firm in the face of the girl's hysterics. "You can talk to her once I've explained the situation." She took a few steps away from them and turned her back to speak to the boy's mother, a woman who, at that moment, had no idea that something terrible had just happened. Lance could hear Zell's voice, slow and deliberate, relaying the news in a way that was almost businesslike. Kaylee went back to sobbing, repeating the same words over and over again.
"She's going to be so mad at me. She told me to watch him."
Lance and Lila looked at each other as, helplessly, Lila attempted to stroke the girl's bare back, flanked by two straps of her bathing suit, the little nodules of her spine poking out from beneath her skin. Lance got a towel and wrapped it around Kaylee, who turned to see who had done so. She looked up at him.
"Are you the guy who saved him?"
she asked. Her eyes bored into him, unsettled him. He nodded and attempted to give her a little smile, but it fell flat. He wanted to offer her something, promise her that her brother would be okay, but he couldn't say that, not with any certainty. He didn't make a habit of lying to kids, at least not any more than he had to. He'd had to lie to his own children a fair amount lately, more than he'd ever thought he'd have to in his entire parenting career. It was for their own good, he told himself. It was so they'd believe there was still some good in the world. Of course, that was a lie. Just look at what had happened here, today, in a place that should be reserved for happiness.
"Will you take me to him now?"
Kaylee asked. He searched for the right words to respond. Trekking over to the hospital with his kids and this girl all in wet bathing suits in search of a little boy who may or may not be dying didn't sound like the most prudent thing to do at the moment. And yet, how could he say no? Suddenly, Jency was at his side. She looked knowingly at Lance, then crouched down and looked at Kaylee. She spoke in that same measured, even tone Zell had been using. It must be a mom reflex. Standing so close to Jency, he could smell her skin. It smelled like copper tone in sunshine. He inhaled deeply, imagining the scent of her going inside him, inflating his battered lungs. He scolded himself for thinking such a thing at a time like this. "Kaylee, honey, why don't you let one of us take you home and wait for your mom to call and let us know what she'd like us to do? I'm not sure that going to be with Cutter right now is the best thing for any of us." She gestured to the girl's bathing suit. "Wouldn't you like to get some dry clothes?" Kaylee shook her head emphatically.
"I want to be with Cutter."
The three of them, Jency, the woman holding the little boy, and Lance, all looked at one another helplessly. Just then, Zell bustled back over and handed the phone to Kaylee.
"Your mama wants to speak to you," she said. "Is she mad?"
Kaylee asked, her voice gone hoarse.
"She's upset, honey, but not at you."
Zell patted her shoulder. She took a few steps away and motioned for the others to follow her. Lance obeyed, as did the rest of them.
"That mother is a basket case," Zell said quietly.
I mean, imagine getting news like this in the middle of your workday. I don't think she even entirely understood what I was telling her. She just burst into tears and didn't make a whole lot of sense after that. I told her I'd be happy to take Kaylee home with me until we can figure out what to do. She looked into the pairs of eyes looking back at her for confirmation. They all nodded dumbly, lacking a better idea. There was no protocol for such things. Zell nodded twice. Okay, that's what we'll do. Lance had no idea how these strangers had suddenly become a we. Zell was his next-door neighbor who had somehow made herself indispensable to him since summer began. The other woman was someone he'd met 5 seconds before he saw the boy in the pool, and he still didn't know the other woman's name at all. He glanced over at Kaylee, hunched over in a white plastic chair, her body all but curled into a ball around that phone, and thought of the weight of her brother in his arms. Something terrifying had happened in their midst, and they were the witnesses, now united by the trauma. So, right, he spoke up. Zell will take Kaylee home with her. I'm right next door, so maybe Alec and Lila can check in on her, or I can answer any questions she may have, or whatever. And we'll just wait for news from the mother and go from there? That sounds like as good a plan as any. Zell's voice was less hearty than usual. She went over to get Kaylee. Lance heard her say, her voice comforting, Your mom needs to drive to the hospital now, honey. She needs to get off the phone so she can drive safely, okay? He looked around at the pool, the water now still and empty. The lifeguards were in panic mode, calling their bosses and filling out forms, unaware that anyone else was there. The music was still off, and the place had cleared out. Their own children spoke in hushed tones, huddled off to the side to process what had happened without the aid of an adult perspective. They probably thought the boy was dead. Lance wasn't sure he wasn't. He looked back at Jency and her friend. This is Lance, Jency said to her friend. The hero. She gave him a smile, one that was genuine but fleeting. He missed it as soon as it was gone. Kaylee. When the snooty girl talked to me, I thought she thought I was someone else. When she smiled at me, I looked over my shoulder to see who she was looking at. I know my face looked shocked when I realized she was talking to me. We'd been coming up to the pool for almost a whole month, played a few feet away from each other in the water many times, and stood next to each other in line for the diving board more than once. But she'd never acted like she knew I was alive. So I'd stuck with Cutter, keeping an eye on him like I was supposed to, and pretended I didn't notice that the girls my own age didn't care two flips about talking to me. What was different about that day? I don't know. I was in the right place at the right time, or the wrong place at the wrong time. It was one way, then it was another. The two things switched like how one minute the sun is there, the next minute it's the moon and you're not quite sure how it happened. Why did she decide to pay attention to me? And why did I have to respond? If I had ignored her, everything might have been different. But I didn't. She asked my name. I told her. She told me hers. I already knew. I'd heard her sister shout it about 100 times by then. And we started playing cross pool. Everything that came after that was irreversible. It just was. Once, when Mom was between both jobs and boyfriends, she sent us to stay with her Aunt Ruby, who lived on a farm out in the country. We stayed there for a long time, though Mom says it wasn't that long. I'm not sure that's true, but it doesn't really matter. What matters is that while we were there, I saw two things I'll never forget. A calf get born, and then, a few days later, that calf dying. I still remember how we found it, cold and stiff in the corner of a stall. Aunt Ruby didn't know what happened to the calf. She said that sometimes things just aren't strong enough to make it in this world. Standing there with those strangers at the pool all looking at me, I thought of that calf and about Cutter splashing around all desperate-like every time he got in the water. He wasn't strong enough either, but I was supposed to be strong for him. I thought of all the times I'd been cruel to him, ignored him, said awful things to him. I hope he knew I didn't mean any of it. I felt the tears sliding down my face, and I didn't bother to wipe them away. I didn't care if those strangers saw me cry. The adults held a little meeting and decided I should go to the old lady's house, the one who always brought Alec and Lila up to the pool. She always had good snacks, so I figured it wouldn't be awful to go with her, even if she was a stranger, and my mom told me never to go with strangers.